This video is sponsored by Normandy 1998, Christopher Mitchell, 212th Trooper, Silas 1610, Carmen CJ, Rune Scribble, Legendary Ray Ray, and Ash, and brought to you by Christopher Mitchell, who requested this topic. If there is a video you want me to make, just head over to Patreon or become a channel member and select the Pickle Producer tier, since among other benefits, you'll get to make a video request every month, be it the continuation of an existing series or a brand new story. Also, while I have you, please consider liking the video and subscribing, since it costs you nothing and really helps the channel grow. But with that out of the way, let's get on with the story. Our story begins at the end of Pokemon 2000, The Power of One, as Jesse, James, and Meowth wash up on a small island after their heroic sacrifice. Though they were not the chosen one who specifically saved the world, it would not have been saved without them, with the only lamentable fact about this being that no one saw their heroics. However, here a wise old Slowking corrects them, claiming that many people saw them and will continue to watch them, causing Meowth to cheer that it looks like the bad guys are finally the good guys, and it is here we see our split from canon, as rather than going back and forth on the good and bad aspects of being good until it all gets so confusing they decide to simply go back to being bad, the trio instead take a moment to bask in how nice it is to do good for once, and how it doesn't quite feel right to return to their old wicked ways after helping save the world. This does beg the question though, if they are to keep doing this, how exactly do they be good? A fleeting noble impulse in a crucial moment is one thing, but a sustained pattern is much harder, something James attests to, as it's why he has so many unused gym memberships running up credit card debt. However, having a brainwave, Jesse suggests they should try copying the twerp since he's good, with the trio racking their brains to figure out what exactly he does that they don't. Piping up first, Meowth states that he supposes the twerp destroys their mechs, so maybe that's what good people do. Though Jesse promptly shuts this down, since they destroy stuff too, but that just results in Officer Jenny getting called. Nodding, James suggests that maybe it's having a Pikachu that makes them good, so they should get their own Pikachu. Though Meowth snaps they've been trying to do that for 104 episodes and that hasn't worked, so he should try again. However, here Jesse interjects, claiming that James might be on the right path, since it's not that he has a Pikachu, but what he does with it, which is challenge gyms. Eyes sparkling, James and Meowth call this faulty logic brilliant. While cackling haughtily, Jessie replies that she knows, though that settles things. If they want to be good, they need to challenge the gyms. With their new course now set, the trio board their Magikarp sub and begin looking for a gym, though due to the ocean current still being a bit wonky from the events with Lugia and the legendary birds, it does not take long for them to be swept off course, so that rather than winding up on the nearby Kumquat Island, they're sent spinning all the way back to Meekin Island. While that's not bad enough, this also results in seaweed getting tangled in their propeller again, meaning someone's got to get out and remove it. Remembering his near-death experience last time, James refuses to go back out there and tries to argue that it's one of the others' turn, though Jesse balks that it's unladylike to stoop to such menial labour, while Meowth just protests that he hates water, with it ultimately being decided they'll play rock-paper-scissors for who has to go. Naturally, Jesse and Meowth both cheat, since they still haven't gotten the hang of this good business yet, resulting in a bawling and pleading James being kicked out into the ocean. Thankfully, this time it is just a little snag that the blue-haired man can fix with ease now that he has experience at the task, though when he surfaces along with the sub, the team find themselves right outside a familiar building, Sissy's gym. Not only that, but the gym leader herself is also present atop her Blastoise, and immediately recognizes them as the crooks from before, even going so far as to tell her water type to get ready to send them blasting off again. That is until Jesse, James, and Meowth all cry for her to hold her fire, since they're not bad guys anymore. Despite having her suspicions about this claim, the Meekin leader at least agrees to hear them out, with the trio recounting the story of their heroic sacrifice and desire to turn over a new leaf by challenging the gyms, just like the twerp. They mean Ash. Having seen the Lugia incident on TV and felt the wild waves all the way from here, Sissy figures that if what they say is true, then she does owe them a debt of gratitude. Not to mention if anyone could win over these bumbling crooks, it's Ash. Alright, if they want to face her gym, she'll allow it. Just come inside and pick a Pokemon each for the target contest. Whooping with delight that they're actually getting a chance to put their non-evil scheme into action, Jesse, James, and Meowth follow the woman inside, where they see a pool with several cans arranged. Plainly, Sissy explains that whoever can knock down the most cans first wins, before calling out Cedra. Since they have no water types to match her, Jesse and James use Arbok and Weezing, who employ poison stings and sludge in place of water guns when the call to begin is given. Unfortunately, Jesse and Arbok aren't exactly precision shooters, figuring a spray and pray method can't fail despite it resulting in just as many misses as hits, while Weezing is conversely too slow, so that every time the two-headed mon lines up a shot, Cedra takes out the exact same can before it can fire. As a result, the duo lose rather badly, and quickly, though having seen them put in a genuine effort, Sissy suggests they take some time to work with their Pokemon then try again. This idea of actually training their Pokemon is a brand new one to the former crooks, though so is being good, so they might as well give it a try. After all, if that doesn't work, they can always build a machine to steal the badge. Wait, no, that's bad guy thinking. Subsequently, Jesse and James spend the evening working with Arbok and Weezing, while Meowth helps out by translating so the two trainers can understand what their friends think, feel, and need from them. This makes the training process much smoother, as Arbok and Weezing are both eager to help their trainers, and so put in as much effort and thought as they can to ensure that they achieve the desired result. Consequently, by the time morning comes, Arbok has gained a bit more accuracy while Weezing is a little faster with its sludge attacks, so that when Sissy approaches to ask if they want to try again, the pink and blue haired duo know that they are. So they should prepare for a fair and, spirited competition. Yeah, that's always what they were gonna say. Choosing not to challenge this obvious lie, Sissy instead leads the trio back inside, where once again Arbok and Weezing challenge Seedra in can shooting. At once, the fruits of their training become apparent, as the two poison types actually manage to keep pace with the dragon Pokemon, so that when the last can falls, their scores are tied, meaning it's on to the second round. This is a water race, though rather than face them one after the other, the gym leader decides to let the former crooks continue challenging together, proposing a three-way race with the rule being that they need to finish ahead of her to win their badge. Once again feeling their lack of a water type, Jesse decides to ride on Arbok's back as it slithers through the water, while James runs across the water's surface while holding onto Weezing to keep from sinking. Unsurprisingly, neither of these tactics come close to matching Blastoise in a swimming race, with the gym leader gaining a commanding lead almost immediately. However, the former Team Rocket duo have something Sissy does not, an ally, as while at first the pair compete against each other just as much as her, when they realize they'll lose on their own, James calls out to Jesse and proposes a team-up. Seeing no harm in this as it's not like working together can make things worse, the magenta-haired woman agrees, with James holding out a hand for her which she quickly clasps with her own. By doing this, Weezing is able to take some of the weight off Arbok, allowing it to swim faster, more or less turning Jesse and James into parasailors, with the result being they rapidly start closing in on Sissy. Having never imagined such a strategy, the Meekin Island gym leader and her partner are briefly stunned, with this making all the difference, as using this momentary slowing down to their advantage, the two challengers pull ahead just as they're entering the home stretch, so that it is they who cross the finish line first, if only by a hair. Nonetheless, a win is a win, with Sissy presenting the pair with the Coralie badge, as well as her congratulations, since she's seldom seen such cooperation before. Even Meowth gives his praise when they're out of the water, since he was sure they were going to blow it, but they actually did pretty good. Throttling him slightly for this remark, Jesse demands to know what he means he thought they were going to blow it. While having some deportment training from his upper-class origins, James awkwardly tells Sissy not to mind them. Thankfully, the gym leader does not seem overly phased, instead telling him that she understands friends fight, and while she was doubtful at first, she does believe they've changed for the better. For that reason, she'll let Danny know they're coming, since she imagines Naval Island will be their next destination. Heeding this advice, the trio head straight there, and while it is hard-pedaling all the way, there is no need to detour since they're no longer following the twerps. However, this is not to say they don't run into a familiar face, that being Danny the gym leader, having briefly met him when they attempted to steal his and the twerps' Pokemon in the middle of their race. Thanks to Sissy's vote of confidence, he does not seem to hold this against them, greeting the trio from his windsurfing board when they moor off the beach, and questioning if they're ready for his gym challenge yet. Seeing no reason to refuse, Jesse and James accept, though they quickly come to rue this decision when they're told their first trial is to climb the icy mountain at the center of the island without help from their Pokemon. Since he is not technically a challenger, Meowth is permitted to ride in the chairlift with Danny, and figuring the gym leader won't be able to see them while he's all the way up at the top, the two former criminals surreptitiously bring out their Pokemon in an attempt to cheat. Unluckily for them, Danny can see, and so sends them back to the bottom of the mountain to try again, and again, and again, every time their old pattern of behavior shines through. Consequently, this takes several times as long as it should, so when they reach the summit, night has fallen, making the frozen biome even chillier. However, what chills Jesse and James even more is the news of their first official challenge, as the climb was simply a preliminary. They must have one of their Pokemon freeze a geyser solid, something none of them are capable of doing. Knowing they won't be able to complete their Orange Island gym challenge without this ability, Danny kindly asks to see all their Pokemon, and upon spotting Lickitung explains that he and his Nidoqueen can tutor it in how to use Ice Beam. However, in return, he wants them to help out at the local village, since he usually spends his time when not windsurfing or fielding challenges there doing odd jobs, and if he's using that time to train Lickitung instead, then someone's got to pick up the slack. As Lickitung's trainer, Jesse fiercely agrees, resulting in all three of them being woken bright and early the following morning as Danny takes the normal type's ball, and in its place gives them a list of jobs people had requested him to do for them today. Having no expected it to be so long, the trio gulp, though surprisingly they do keep their word, as among other things, they use their skills at mechanical engineering from their various mechs to fix an old man's car, their disguise skills and theatricality to help the local school children put on a play, and their never say die attitude in the face of constant failure to encourage a struggling businesswoman to get back out there and give her all to make her stall succeed. As a result, when they return to Danny that evening, they're exhausted but beloved by the community, with this serving as a reminder of how nice it feels to be good guys. Meanwhile, the gym leader reports that Lickitung also worked really hard today, so they should be ready to do that challenge whenever they want. Subsequently, the following morning, they do not go to the gym, since that climb was hard, and after all their efforts yesterday, they deserve a day at the beach. But the day after, they do return to challenge Danny, even doing it the right way first time around, so they have the mid-morning sun shining on them when they reach the top rather than the chill of night. As promised, the first challenge is Lickitung versus Nidoqueen to see who can freeze a geyser of water faster, with this resulting in a tie as both finish solidifying their geysers at the same moment. Considering this is Lickitung's first proper attempt to use this move outside of training, this speaks to a degree of talent that it could match its teacher so soon, though sadly a tie is not a win, meaning the trio will need to win both of the remaining challenges to guarantee victory. And speaking of the remaining challenges, next up is the toboggan carving contest, with Meow the Victory Bell and Arbok handling this, though here they lose by a wide margin, as while Danny finishes his sled in a matter of minutes, Meowth works for almost an hour, all the while growling testily when the gym leader or his teammates question if he's almost finished. Finally, when he is done, he unveils his creation, a toboggan that more or less looks exactly like Danny's, causing Jesse and James to yell at him for wasting time, though the scratch catcher shoots back that these two palookas don't appreciate fine artistry and craftsmanship. Nonetheless, now is not the time for fighting, since they still have to do the final challenge, the race. Like with Sissy, Danny and his trio of Pokemon gain an early lead, as this is something they have a lot of practice with, while Jesse, James, Meowth and their Pokemon are complete novices. However, just when things start to look dire, Meowth cackles and presses a button inside the sled, causing it to sprout ice treads and begin rolling down the mountain at high speeds, while Jesse and James rapidly change their tune, calling the feline brilliant and claiming they never doubted him for a second. With this at their disposal, an incredibly easy victory is inevitable for the trio. And while Danny still can't figure out how Meowth made such complex machinery out of frozen water, he commends them for their teamwork all the same. Additionally, since the challenge ended in a tie, it falls to the gym leader's discretion as to whether a badge should be awarded, though after all they did to improve themselves in the town, Danny feels it would be wrong to deny them, and so gives them their Sea Ruby badge. Excited at their victory, the trio then set off for Trevita Island on the site of their next gym, though since there's a good bit further away than Naval Island was from Meekin, they need to stop off at Morrow Island to resupply and rest after the long journey. While staying at the Pokemon Center, they run into an old fisherman who warns them not to continue on their path and instead take a long winding detour, since recently a wrathful deep sea beast has taken up residence in the waters between here and Trevita and is known to attack any human it comes across. Curiously, the trio ask around to see if anyone knows why or what kind of Pokemon it is, though all the townsfolk can say for certain is that it's a water type, and that their best guess is a human did something terrible to it, so now it seeks revenge on all humankind. A little relieved, Meowth quips that it's a good thing he's a Pokemon then, though James points out that in this situation the Twerps would probably investigate, so they should too, with Jesse agreeing, though only because she doesn't want to pedal the long way around that the islanders are proposing. With this settled, the trio reboard their submarine and begin searching for this beast, though before long the monster finds them, with its glowing purple eyes appearing out of the inky black water as it rushes towards them before the trio feels something wrapped tight around the submarine. Turning the sub's periscope around, Jesse, James, and Meowth are shocked to find a powerful-looking Gyarados attempting to crush their craft like a tin can. Though, more shockingly still, James recognizes it as the same Gyarados he bought while it was still a Magikarp aboard the Saint Anne. Remembering their last encounter with the furious sea serpent, the trio have a pretty good idea why it's so angry, with Jesse and Meowth lambasting James for dooming them. Though, here the flamboyant man surprises them, as he agrees that this is his fault, but he's a plan to save them. willing to try anything at this point, Meowth asks what it is, to which James requests that they surface so he can speak with Gyarados. Letting out a groan that Jimmy's gone off the deep end, Meowth does not hold much faith in this plan, and while Jessie doesn't either, she tells her teammates to pedal, since at the very least it's worth a shot. Subsequently, the trio do manage to force their vessel back above sea level, admittedly with a lot more effort now that they're towing a massive sea serpent, at which point they pop the hatch of the sub and allow James to climb out so that he can address Gyarados face to face. At the sight of its former trainer, the atrocious Pokemon readies a Hyper Beam, though James does not retreat, instead sincerely apologizing for how he treated it and claiming that he's a changed man now, so if it will give him a chance, he'd like to prove it to Gyarados. Unfortunately, after the way he broke its trust, this just comes off as empty words, resulting in the Hyper Beam continuing to grow. Though figuring a more practical show of penitence might be in order, the blue-haired man rummages in his belt and pulls out its golden Pokeball, stating that while he did do wrong by the Sea Serpent, he never forgot it. As this happens, Jessie and Meowth poke their heads out of the hatch as well, having finally found the courage to back up their friend after not hearing the sound of him being blasted to a crisp, that now it is all three of them who beg Gyarados to believe them. For a moment, the water flying type seems unmoved, though after what feels like forever, the Hyper Beam dissipates and it lets out a roar. Putting his translating skills to use, Meowth cheers with relief that the big jerk said it believes James, with this causing him to beam broadly and run up to hug his reunited teammate, only to receive a smack on the head from one of Gyarados' whiskers that leaves a huge lump, while Meowth somewhat belatedly finishes that it said it believes him and is willing to give him a second chance, but they're still a long way from forgiveness. Nonetheless, James takes where he can get, returning the atrocious Pokemon to its ball and re-entering the sub, since now they can continue to Trevita Island unimpeded. Here they meet Rudy, who accepts their challenge, with Arbok and Weezing doing the target practice, which after their training in two rounds with Sissy is a piece of cake. This just leaves the real battle, which is a best of three in which the gym leader will use the same type of Pokemon as the challengers, meaning they'll need to declare their picks ahead of time. Since this is an odd number and they're battling together, this poses a bit of a problem, though luckily Meowth is a solution. They flip a coin for who gets to use two Pokemon. However, it is at this point that they are reminded how they're perpetually broke, having spent the last of their money on dinner back at Morrow Island, so they instead flip one of James's bottle caps. Having called Starside up, the toss goes his way, so the team they settle on is Victory Bell, Lickitung, and Gyarados, with the first match pitting the grass poison type against Rudy's Exeggutor. Unfortunately, this does not go well for the blue-haired man, since due to Exeggutor favouring Egg Bomb and Victory Bell not being particularly mobile, not to mention having its mouth on top of its head, it's only a matter of time before an egg lands in its screaming gullet and renders the flycatcher Pokemon unable to battle, giving the first victory to Rudy. Luckily, next up is Jessie and Lickitung versus Tauros, and having gained a bit of seriousness from its training with Denny, Lickitung goes right on the attack, using its powerful tongue to paralyze Tauros, before blasting it with supersonic while it's vulnerable. As a result, Tauros begins a confused rampage across the clifftop battlefield, so that more than once Rudy has to cry out so that it doesn't go tumbling off the edge and into the ocean below. Being a ruthless battler, Jessie has no qualms exploiting this weakness, having Lickitung assail its bewildered foe with a volley of stomps and tackles, so that before long it goes down, having only dealt a few trivial blows to the smaller, pinker normal type. Unsurprisingly, the fact that she won while her teammate didn't immediately goes to the magenta-haired woman's head, as she laughs that she truly is superb at whatever she turns her hand to. Or from the sidelines, Meowth snarks that she certainly is one of the all-time greats at delusion, and James returns to the trainer box to make up for his failure with Gyarados. Calling the great beast of the sea forth, he implores it to help him out, while across from them Rudy picks Starmie. Being a wrathful creature, Gyarados barely even waits for the call to begin before opening fire with Hyper Beam, and in the face of such a blast, the water psychic type is felled in one blow, causing everyone assembled to sweat drop, since Rudy had not imagined a challenger's Pokemon could be so strong. While Jessie, James, and Meowth ponder how badly things could have gone for them if James hadn't talked the Sea Serpent into giving him a second chance. Nonetheless, the trio do still claim their Spike Shell badge when it is proffered, with Jessie being the one to actually collect it, while James walks over and pats Gyarados' side in a sign of gratitude and praise, only to get smacked on the head by its whisker again, since it wishes to reiterate, they're still not at that point of reconciliation yet. Now all that's left is to visit Kumquat Island, which they are dismayed to learn is on the other side of the archipelago and pretty close to where they started when they first decided to do this gym challenge. Cursing their luck, the trio begin the long sub ride there, though they do at least get to stop off on Shamoodie Island, Guild, where they are treated to an all-they-can-eat buffet by the residents who have not forgotten their role in assisting the Chosen One. And speaking of, it is during their stay here that they witness Ash's battle with Drake, as the townsfolk have erected an outdoor cinema to watch their hero challenge the island's strongest trainer. Having wondered what the twerp's been up to in their absence, the formerly Team Rocket trio decide to stick around and watch, with it being surprising how quickly they start rooting for him, and how loudly they cheer when Dragonite goes down and he's awarded the Victor's Trophy, with them even shedding some tears at their twerps all grown up. Following this brief reprieve, the three friends then depart Shamuti Island, though when they finally arrive on Kumquat, they quickly come to wish they'd stayed a bit longer, as a giant mech with a big red R on the front is terrorizing the beachgoers and stealing their Pokemon. Fuming that this is trademark infringement and that they were doing this first, the trio quickly spring into action, with Lickitung freezing the feet of the mech, Victory Bell binding its grabbing arms with Vine Whip, and even Meowth helping out as he jumps up and slashes the cockpit glass with Fury Swipes to reveal none other than Chuck and Cassidy. At the sight of their rivals, Team Rocket agents both past and present glare at each other with an enraged gasp of, "You!" before demanding to know what the other group is doing here. Factually, Biff explains how once the trio stopped reporting in, Giovanni dispatched them to do the job they were too inept to finish, while Cassidy chortles that it looks like she owes the boss a soda, since he assumed they'd gone rogue, but she figured they weren't smart enough for such a scheme and had just drowned. Either way, she hopes they enjoy filing for unemployment, since they're fired. Unluckily for the blonde, Jessie is also fired up, as she growls that she'll show Cassidy, before looking to her friends and asking if they're ready to teach her and Steve a lesson. Nodding resolutely, the guys grin that they're with her all the way, then as one they prepare to launch an attack. In response, Bill brings out his Primeape and Cassidy her Raticate, though neither are overly concerned since they've always been better than these clowns. However, what they don't know is that by travelling through the islands and challenging the gyms, Jessie and James have grown as trainers more than perhaps even they realise, so that when their Pokemon clash, it is the two villains who are sent blasting off for once. Such a sight is an incredible catharsis to the trio, who gleefully embrace as they mockingly call they hope Cassidy has a blast, and that they'll see Hutch next fall. Though, surprisingly, they aren't the only ones cheering, as all around them the assembled beachgoers are applauding their heroes and thanking them for saving their Pokemon from those awful thieves. Not being used to stopping Pokemon-related crime, Jessie, James, and Meowth aren't quite sure how to handle this adulation, though thankfully they aren't left to wander for long, as chief among their fans is a red-headed woman who introduces herself as Luana, the Kumquat gym leader, and insists they follow her back to her hotel. A little intimidated by her motherly presence, none among the trio protest, instead keeping pace as she shows them around all the amenities, which they may of course use free of charge as thanks for their heroism. However, the main attraction is the large stadium at the heart of the facility, where she explains that they will have their tag battle, so she hopes they're ready since after seeing their teamwork out on the beach, she's looking forward to battling them this afternoon. Having no expected challenge so soon, the trio all share a glance, though all the same after indulging in a hearty room service lunch, they find themselves back in the ring a few hours later. For her Pokemon, Luana uses Alakazam and Marowak, while the challenging trainers go with their old faithfuls Arbok and Weezing, only for Meowth to ask what these two boneheads are thinking, since the two types' poison is weak against a ground and psychic. Turning to face each other in a way that makes it abundantly clear neither of them knew this, James asks if Jessie thinks Luana will let them have a do-over, though as it turns out, it is already too late for that, as the gym leader has begun her attack. Wanting to see what these two young heroes have up their sleeve, Luana wastes no time in going on the offensive, having Marowak sock Arbok with bone meringues while Alakazam psychically spins Weezing like a basketball before launching it for a three-point shot at the back wall. From this opening salvo alone, it is plain to see that Jessie and James are outclassed, not to mention flustered by Meowth's revelation, with her attempt at a counterattack only leading to further humiliation as the gym leader duo switch targets seamlessly and begin battering the opposite poison type. This is embarrassing to watch, as the two trainers quickly begin resorting to random attacks without much thought for strategy, though as the old saying goes, even a broken clock is right twice a day, as during the chaos, Alakazam slips and falls on an errant patch of sludge on the floor from one of Weezing's attacks. Getting an idea, James then tells Jessie that he's figured out why they're losing. They're not using their greatest strength, their complete and total buffoonery, to which the magenta-haired woman grins that of course he's brilliant. They should be doing what they do best, which for them is being the worst. With this plan in mind, the duo engage in perhaps their most cartoonish scheme yet, having Weezing create smoke screens so that Arbok can slither between opponents' legs and trip them up, or also have the two poison types circle their foes in opposite directions so they get dizzy trying to keep track of them both. This allows the two Pokemon to strike while their opponents' guards are down, with this surprisingly working, to the point where it is actually Marowak who takes out Alakazam, as when it swings at Weezing while it has gunk in its eyes, the poison gas Pokemon drops to the ground, causing the ground type to swing wide and club its friend instead. However, due to the gym's rules being that the battle is to first knock out, this counts as a win for the reformed crooks, meaning Luana happily presents them with their Jade Star badge, or at least she does when she finally manages to stop laughing, since she hasn't had a battle that ridiculous in years. With this, the trio are at last entitled to visit Pumalo Island where they can challenge Drake just as Ash did, though when they arrive and attempt to book in their battle, they are horrified to learn that they need 6 Pokemon, or between them they only have 5. Nonchalantly, Meowth calls this a real shame, though this casual attitude quickly fades when he spots the evil look on his teammates' faces. Subsequently, when the full battle begins the following morning, the trio's first Pokemon is a rather mutinous Meowth, who grumbles that he can't believe he let those two talk him into this, while across from them, the Orange League champ unveils his Ditto. As is common for its species, Ditto immediately becomes a carbon copy of the Scratch Cat, though when Drake calls for a payday, Ditto simply looks back at him and shrugs due to not knowing this move. A little put off that the challengers would enter a Meowth that doesn't even know this most basic attack, the champ next tries Growl and Feint Attack, only to be met by the same bewildered look. Almost annoyed now, Drake demands to know what moves this Meowth does know, to which the genuine article replies, not many, since he gave all that up to learn how to talk. Letting out a sigh, the Orange crew leader finally settles on Scratch, since surely even he must know that, with the Faker extending its claws and charging, though here Meowth meets this with Fury Swipes, parrying the initial blow and then striking back. While this does show Drake another move he can use, it doesn't do him much good. In spite of being a perfect physical replica, Ditto could not copy Meowth's grit or craftiness, meaning when the pair clash, the original manages to miraculously prevail through a mix of sneaky strategies and a refusal to be made to look like a chump by some copycat. At this surprise victory, Jesse excitedly asks Meowth if he knows what this means, to which the Scratch Cat replies, "That my incompetence is genetic?" Though the woman replies no. It means they actually won their first battle, with this causing Meowth to grin that yeah, they did, so maybe he really does have the makings of a true Pokemon battler after all. However, this is promptly proved false, when Drake's second choice, Onix, tail slaps Meowth into a wall as soon as the match begins, knocking him out cold and ending his Orange League run. Thankfully, here Victory Bell is able to pick up the slack, taking out Onix before falling to Venusaur, with this making it Jessie's turn to battle again, as she picks Arbok. This is a smart choice, as with Venusaur being fairly sedentary, Jessie has Arbok employ speedy moves such as Tackle and Poison Sting to strike at the big bruiser before retreating underground with Dig to avoid damage. Through this, it is actually able to get a win, though, like Meowth, it suffers a prompt defeat thereafter, as Drake's Gengar delights in tying Arbok in a pretzel then blowing it away with Nightshade. Following Jessie's lead, James chooses to use his starter too, with this becoming a battle of two poisonous floaters. However, just because they are similar in this regard does not mean they are the same in all manners, as unlike Venusaur, Gengar quad resists poison moves and is immune to normal attacks, with the result being a loss for Weezing that now puts the challenging duo at a numbers disadvantage. Having only one Pokemon left, Jesse next brings out Lickitung, and while this should have the same result as Weezing, Ice Beam comes in clutch, allowing for a clash between the Ice Move and Nightshade to end in their favour, with this streak continuing as it likewise manages to take down Drake's Electabuzz, after getting off a lucky freeze in the opening salvo that more or less just lets it beat on the electric type until it passes out. This just leaves Dragonite, and having seen how strong this thing was when the twerp battled it, Jessie does her best to be tactical, having Lickitung stick with that quad-effective Ice Beam in the hopes that maybe she'll freeze the dragon too. Unfortunately, this is a vain hope, as while the move definitely hurts Dragonite, Lickitung is not given a chance to repeat its action, since on Drake's command, the dragon Pokemon unleashes a retaliatory Ice Beam that both freezes the normal type solid and knocks it out. This just leaves James and Gyarados, though if anyone has a chance of toppling the dragon flyer, it's them. To this end, the blue-haired man brings out his fearsome sea monster and commands it to use Hyper Beam, though like with Lickitung, Dragonite matches this, causing the final battle to start with a literal bang as the two attacks meet in the middle and then explode. Putting everything he's learned from this journey to use, James next tries to have Gyarados restrain and constrict Dragonite, since maybe that will neutralize it, though this just brings it in range for a point-blank Dragon Rage that has the atrocious Pokemon hissing in pain.
Were that not bad enough, Dragonite has an even more devastating tool in its arsenal, Thunder, the bolts of lightning raining down from the sky in a monstrous barrage that Gyarados can do little to avoid. To its credit, it does manage to tank one of these quad-effective moves through sheer fury and tenacity alone. Though sadly, the same cannot be said of two, so that as it is lit up in an aura of blazing yellow, it collapses with spirals for eyes. And just like that, Jesse, James, and Meowth's Orange League run is ended in defeat, with the magenta-haired woman and Scratch Cat hanging their heads, though this is far from the biggest thing on James's mind, as at the sight of Gyarados unconscious, he rushes onto the field to check on it and thank it for doing its best. Like every other time its trainer has approached it, the water flying type raises a whisker, though this time it does not strike him, instead coiling softly around his waist in a gesture akin to affection, since now it sees for certain that the human truly does care for it, not just what it can do for him, like he did when he initially bought it. Meanwhile, Drake approaches the challengers to congratulate them on making it as far as they did, while all around them the spectators continue to chant their names. This truthfully confuses the former crook since they lost. Though shaking his head, Drake retorts that the reason people were and still are cheering for them isn't because of their battling, it's because of all the things they did around the islands to help people, since wins and losses come and go, but it is these acts of kindness and selflessness that stay with people. At once, a light bulb goes off on top of the trio's heads as they share a look, with Jesse questioning if maybe this is the thing the twerp does that makes him a good guy, while James nods that now that she mentions it, he thinks so too. Meanwhile, Meowth's face splits in a wide grin as he asks if his friends know what this means, and when they admit that they don't, he laughs they really did become good guys after all, with this making the other two laugh as well, since for once, they actually succeeded in their mission. And that's where we'll leave things. What other adventures await our formerly Team Rocket trio now that they're done with the Orange League? Will they continue to challenge other regional gyms or branch out into something else? And how might Ash and friends react should they ever meet again? Find out as the journey continues.